I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Mozart's Concerto for Flute and Harp. A tale of one city and three trips. The city in question is Paris, which Mozart visited three times during his all-too-short life of 35 years. The first two visits occurred during the Grand Tour of 1763 to 1766. The Mozarts arrived en famille in Paris in November of 1763 and stayed for 5 months. The aristocracy of Paris, including the royal family, was charmed by the Mozart children, Wolfgang, age 8, and his sister Maria Anna, or Nannerl, age 12. They were well rewarded for their efforts with 50 louis d'or and a golden snuffbox. There were private concerts given, and Mozart's first works, a series of violin sonatas, Köchel 6 through 9, were printed. Leopold positively quelled about his precious children in his letters home to Salzburg. My little girl, although only 12 years old, is one of the most skillful players in Europe, and in a word, my boy knows more in his 8th year than one would expect for a man of 40. He was probably right on both counts. Having triumphed in Paris, the Mozarts took their show across the Channel to London, where further success would be achieved. Mozart's second visit to Paris was part of their journey back to Salzburg, and they remained in the French capital for May and June of 1766, leaving in July. This time, the Mozarts did not set the town on fire, and there were few performances of his works. Their good friend, the supporter, the Baron Grimm, would write about the now 9-year-old Mozart and his 13-year-old sister. If these children live, they will not remain in Salzburg. Monarchs will soon be disputing about who should have them. Sadly, he was so very wrong. It is Mozart's final trip to Paris as a 22-year-old adult that will occupy us for this podcast and is truly the most interesting of all. For this trip, Leopold and Maria Anna remained in Salzburg. Mozart set off with his mother, Anna Maria, in 1777, and their first significant stop was Mannheim. The music scene in this southwestern German city was nothing short of fabulous. Though Mozart was stuck there for the winter, he had no problem finding pupils and received a commission from an amateur flutist named Ferdinand de Jean for 4 flute quartets and 3 flute concerti. Mozart wrote 3 of the 4 quartets, completed the first of the concerti. For the second, he shamefully fobbed off his oboe concerto onto poor de Jean, and being in a great rush to get to Paris, never wrote the 3rd concerto at all. Mozart wrote to his father Leopold, "It is not surprising I've been unable to finish them, for I never have a single hour's quiet here. Moreover, you know I become quite powerless when I am obliged to write for an instrument I can't stand." Whatever Mozart's feelings about the flute, there was another instrument that he was extremely interested in writing for, and that was the soprano Aloysia Weber. He had fallen madly in love with her and wanted to take her to Italy so she could become a prima donna. Both Leopold and Anna Maria were horrified by the prospect of losing both their son and meal ticket to some operatic Lola and urged young Wolfgang to get to Paris ASAP. He would, by the way, eventually marry her sister after she rejects him, but that is another story for another time, mes petits amis. Mozart left for the French capital in March of 1778. Mozart's reception in Paris this time was as an adult, far different than on his earlier trips. He was no longer a wunderkind, and his complex musical style didn't sit well with the decorative tastes his Parisian hosts enjoyed. Mozart spoke very little French, and it was a toss-up as to which he enjoyed less, French music or French people. Leopold was very keen on Mozart succeeding in the City of Lights, but sadly for the talented 22-year-old genius, it was much more the City of Slights. To quote the man himself, "These French idiots still think I'm 7 years old because they knew me at that age. I am treated like a beginner, except by musical people who think otherwise." The Concerto for Flute and Harp, Köchel 299, was written in April of 1778, shortly after Mozart's arrival in Paris. It was commissioned by Adrien Louis de Bonnières, Duc de Guines, who was a talented amateur flute player. His daughter, Marie-Louise Philippine, played the harp and studied composition with Mozart. While he described her harp playing as magnifique, she had absolutely no compositional ability whatsoever. The Duke was very fond of his daughters playing and no doubt wanted a piece they could perform together. Sadly, he never paid Mozart for the commission and had his servant pay Mozart only half of what he was owed for the lessons. A disgusted Mozart refused to take the money. Concertos for multiple instruments were all the rage in Paris at this time and were entitled Symphonie Concertante. While Mozart had written the above-mentioned works for solo flute, this is his only work for harp. The harp of Mozart's time was a much simpler and less versatile instrument than the modern double-action pedal harp, and Mozart treats the harp as a plucked piano. However, the timbral beauty of flute and harp with Mozart's amazing melodies is an irresistible combination, and this concerto never fails to please. The first movement of the concerto is in double exposition sonata form. I realize that's quite a mouthful, but all will be explained. Sonata form has three parts: the exposition, where we meet the themes, the developments, where they are changed, and you guessed it, developed, and the recapitulation, where we meet the themes once again. In a classical era concerto, both the orchestra and the soloists have their own expositions, hence double exposition sonata form. Typically, first movement sonata forms have two principal themes plus a cadence theme, and this concerto follows all the rules to a T. Here's our opening theme. Let's call it theme A. Gorgeous, isn't it? Yes, it is. Mozart's orchestra for this concerto is rather modest. Strings, two oboes, two horns. Considering he has a flute and a harp for solo instrument, he probably felt that there was no need for elaborate scoring. Speaking of the horns, they introduce theme B. Finally, we have our closing or wrap-it-up theme, which ends the orchestra's exposition. The next step in the concerto process is to meet the soloists. They've been hanging around, twiddling their thumbs, looking at the ceiling. You've been admiring their dresses now for about 2 whole minutes, and now it's time to see what they're made of. There are two things we want to know. Will their entrance be subtle or enthusiastic? And will they play the same material presented by the orchestra or something of their own? Here's what Mozart does. You guessed it, they play exactly the same material as theme A for the orchestra, and I think we can describe their entrance as enthusiastic. After a longish interlude featuring the flute and harp, they play theme B. Finally, flute and harp play the closing theme. Now that we've met the themes, we move on to the development, which focuses mostly on theme A. Truthfully, Mozart is far more interested in the beauty of his themes than in changing or developing them. But here's the opening section so that you can know what's going on and what it sounds like. ¶¶ The music is a little more mysterious than what we have in the rest of the concerto, but rather conservative by Mozartian development standards. Eventually, the development is over, and with the help of some trills, we arrive at the triumphant recapitulation of theme one. Once Mozart has recapitulated his themes, it's time for the cadenza. An interested, or at least still awake, podcaster would ask, what is a cadenza? Fortunately, I have an answer. Cadenzas are improvised sections for the soloist that usually occur towards the end of a concerto movement. The soloists are given as much time as they need or want to express themselves. They can play an established cadenza written by someone else, they can write out their own, or they can improvise one on the spot. Doing that with two soloists would be something to see. Sadly, Mozart left us no cadenzas for this concerto, so our soloists are on their own. Here's what they came up with on this recording. Truthfully, I'm not sure if this is someone else's cadenza, a pre-existing one, but I would put money on that. The second movement of the concerto is marked andantino, certainly not fast, but of a walking pace. We lose the oboes and horns from the first movement, and only the strings accompany the solo flute and harp. To achieve a fuller sound with these limited resources, Mozart divides the violas into two sections, an old trick, but a good one. The main theme is introduced by the strings. Then the soloists take over the same material. Mozart was never at a loss for a good slow movement, and this one is of operatic beauty. Our third movement is a rondo. It has lots of great melodies and sends us home tapping our toes. Our horns and oboes are back. Here's the opening theme for the orchestra. And here's the opening theme for our soloists, which is somewhat similar. I'll leave you to enjoy the rest, and it is indeed enjoyable. So what, mes petits amis, is indeed great about Mozart's concerto for flute and harp? One, it's a sonic spectacular. These two solo instruments complement each other perfectly. The melodic flute and harmonic harp are natural partners. Two, Mozart's use of his solo instruments is so deft. Both flute and harp are given equal prominence. They play well with the orchestra and with each other. The balance between soloists and orchestra is just about perfect. Three, Mozart manages to write a work in the popular and, in his opinion, trashy French style and still maintain his own high artistic standards. Four, despite Mozart's unfortunate words about the flute and the fact that he never returned to the harp, he wrote beautifully for both instruments. I think we take Mozart's momentary pique concerning the flute much too seriously. I've never met a flutist who didn't love playing either the concertos or the quartets. As a colleague of mine once said, Mozart didn't write the magic oboe or the magic bassoon, he wrote the magic flute. Postscript. Allow me to return to the man who commissioned this work, Adrien Louis de Bonnières, Duc de Guines. While he was a man of great prominence and a fine flutist, he once played flute duets with Frederick the Great of Prussia, he also stiffed Mozart, who was having a terrible time in Paris, both artistically and financially. If it's any comfort, later in life, the Duke grew so fat, he was obliged to have two different size pairs of pants, one for sitting and one for standing. Every morning his valet would inquire, will monsieur be sitting today? If not, then le grand duc would be lowered into the appropriate pants by two of his many footmen. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Mozart's Flute and Harp Concerto.